So I messaged you the agenda, Joel. So the introduction, and then there's a trailer. You guys watch the trailer, right?
Oh, wait, hold
No.
on, hold on.
I was watching the serial
Adulthood.
killer documentaries just seconds ago.
I watched the trailer 3 times.
Sorry. We'll watch it 5, don't worry.
Hello and welcome to the Freaking Awesome Podcast. It is Sunday, January 31st, 2021, or 2021, whatever you guys want to say. I'm Benjamin Obaya, and joining me today, they are the hosts of the YouTube video game series Date Night. Please welcome back again, always, John and Audrey Obaya.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay.
Hi. Energy. Energy.
He is the creator of the Million Dollar Underwear Zine. Please welcome comedy writer and first time guest, Joel Barber.
Hi.
I never actually asked you if your last name is also pronounced Barber, but I guess.
Yeah, it's Barber as a shop.
Yeah, cool. Do you ever want to own a barber shop? I don't know.
No, but people do ask me this. I do have a cousin who does cut hair, so one of us still has the old family business somewhere.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Before we start, Joel, let the listeners know where you're from and what have you been doing, and talk about the Million Dollar Underwear Zine that I know that you're working on the 4th issue right now.
Yeah. I'm a military dependent, so I was born in Germany. I lived in Japan, graduated high school in Korea, lived in California. My life is a lot of moving. My Million Dollar Underwear zine, is a comedy zine that I started in 2016. Originally it was just like random sketch comedy pieces that I had throughout the years. I started writing comedy when I was 16 or 17 years old. I can't really say whatever the time, because time kind of has no meaning in this in this pandemic. But I was lucky enough to find 3 dudes in high school who had the same kind of humor as me, and we just started writing bits to entertain ourselves. And throughout the years, I've just held on to stuff. And so I was like, I got to do something with this around 2015, 16. And I put this out and I expected people to be like, okay, you're done here. And I've just got a lot of positive response. So I've been putting them out. I put out the 3rd issue last year, and that's kind of veered away from sketch comedy. Still there, but it's part one of a 4-part series about a woman who just dealing with the growing pains of leaving like your early 20s and kind of maturing into adulthood.
Nice. Yeah. I've read all of them, and they're pretty great. And
thank you.
I always want to say the word absurd, because I think your type of comedy does get to that point where highly humorous, but also absurdist. So, but yeah, I recommend it. What website would you recommend to purchase one of your zines or zines? Is it zine or zine, actually?
Magazine. I say zine, but everybody else seems to say zine, and I'm like, I don't know what the right one is.
I think it's a zine, because you say magazine.
I think it's zine.
Yeah.
Because it's that, there's a line in the, what's it, that Harry Danger song, Harvey Danger song, Flagpole Sitta. It's like, we read zines, and I was like, that's how I've been pronouncing it since I heard that song. And no one's told me no, but people argue with me.
I think you are correct, though. I think because, like John was also mentioning, magazine, and it just seems like,
yeah.
It makes sense. Call it zine.
You can find all my issues. You can buy all my issues at milliondollarunderwearzine.com, and you can read the 3rd issue in its entirety on the website, because I came out right as the pandemic started, and I didn't want to. It's tough out there. So it's kind of ridiculous to charge you money for this. And also, I will gladly take the money and send you a hard copy, but I'm not super in love with going to the post office right now.
I always also admire the artists that you guys you've always chosen. Yeah.
I'd wanted to just stick with one artist, and then someone suggested I should do something similar to like Harvey Pekar, where he got a different artist every time. And it kind of just worked out. The person who did the second issue was Steve Minty, a friend of mine from college, and the first one, Jessica, and she's gonna be mad because I totally blanked on her name right now.
Oh no.
Steve was supposed to do the first issue and he dropped out, and so Jessica came in because she was already doing the graphic design layout. And the third issue, God, I'm really terrible. It's been that kind of thing. Hold on one second. I'll grab this because I feel embarrassed that I don't know.
I sometimes forget John's name, so it's okay.
Okay, so the third one was done by this guy named Joey, and I'm trying to find his last name here. Like, I'm a terrible collaborator. Joey Nervara Jr. The second to last Zine Fest I did, me and him shared a table, and we just ended up kind of like, we were there for like 6 hours just shooting shit, and we weren't getting a lot of sales, so it gave us kind of time to like just chew the fat sort of thing. And I went through all his stuff and I was like, I got to figure out a way to get this guy to come work on the project. And I didn't think I was going to get him until probably about issue 4 or 5. And I just took a long shot because he's from North Carolina. I'm in Virginia, and he just happened to be in the area. And I was like, look, all right, if he's in the area, all the stars are aligning, and I got them. And I pay artists because I'm like, I can't do favors and shit.
Yeah.
Can I cuss on this?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So I always say, if I'm working with an artist, and this is where I kind of going to slide in a plug if for anyone's looking to do or any kind of artwork here, I'll pay you your rate. And all I need is about 3 or 4 illustrations. You just read the material. I'm not gonna like tell you what you need unless it's like really dire to the story. I want this to be an experience where you kind of just figure out and go your own way. I used to work at a graphic design studio, so I've heard a lot of artists complain about shitty customers. So I'm like, let me make this easy for you, give you a quick paycheck and be happy. And I've been happy with everything I've gotten so far.
Nice. Yeah, I feel like the art from different issues, they vary, but it has this coherent still style that I admire. That's like, I don't know how you explain it, but it matches like your humor too. So I really appreciate how you like go out there and try to get different artists.
It's harder than it should be.
That's how I am with guests. So when I'm like, oh, I want this guest, and I've always, it's like when you DM them, and then sometimes I do get let down where like some guests can't go, or time-wise they can't, and they always promise me like later on, so I'll have them later on. But thank you for being our guest today, and hopefully you have fun here too. So
all right.
So if you're new to the podcast, we usually discuss the things we watched, listened, played, and read throughout the week, and we end it with a main discussion. This week's main discussion is the film, The Little Things. That is the film that just was premiered on HBO Max and also in theaters. It was a deal that Warner Brothers did a couple months ago, that they were going to release their films on exclusively on HBO Max for a month. So I think this is one of the first ones that is coming. I know they did Wonder Woman last month. But I think this is the start of this year where they're going to release a film on that streaming service. But before all that, we have a trailer talk. This week's trailer is Shin Ultraman. That was a clip from the film Shin Ultraman, directed by, let me pronounce this correctly, Shinji Higuchi. Shinji Higuchi. You probably know him if you watch a lot of Japanese films. He made the 2016 film, he directed it, Shin Godzilla, which is a film I have but haven't watched yet. And he also made the well-loved, not, I'm just sarcastically saying this, the action, live-action adaptation of Attack on Titans. I don't know if you guys watched that.
Yeah, he also, it was a live-action for that.
Yeah, it's not that great. It's okay. It's okay. but on IMDb, this is the plot synopsis. An alien is out for justice and pursues a rogue criminal to a planet called Earth. To atone for his deeds, he leaves the power to transfer a human into a hero out for good and earthly protection. I'm gonna ask you, Joel, do you have like what do you call it? Not understand, but do you know about Ultraman or ever watch the television show, the comics, and what's your thoughts about this trailer?
I know vaguely of Ultraman. Like, I living over in Japan, like in my early teenage years, I got really into like Godzilla, but like that Ultraman and Astro Boy are like two blind spots that I have. Like, I know of the concept, but I don't really know much of it. I saw the trailer for this and I'm not super excited, but once you said it was directed from the same guy who did Shin's Godzilla, I'm like, I enjoyed that. So I'm going to give this a shot. I'll probably end up finding it on like Amazon Prime or Netflix, probably about 6 months to a year after.
Yes, release. Yeah.
So I will probably have to just leave this like a mental note here. So I'm more excited to see what the director does more than I am like this actual franchise.
Yeah, because like I have Shin Godzilla, I haven't watched it yet, but from my understanding from like friends that watched it, it's a more serious take on Godzilla than the ones from like it plays homage to like the, you know, the early Japanese films, but also like a more serious take. I don't know if that is that what you thought about the film too.
I thought it was better than the American American version.
Yeah.
I know that's kind of low hanging fruit, but that was what I wanted in a Godzilla movie, as opposed to let's follow around Aaron Taylor Johnson or whatever.
The whole movie, yeah.
Yeah.
How about you, John? I know growing up, you and I know about Ultraman. So what's your thoughts about like the trailer?
Yeah, like we didn't watch anything from Ultraman though. Like the things that I'm aware of, well, we're not aware of. Like we had toys, I think.
Yes,
I remember seeing toys and statues. These are older siblings, like those type of things back then. And then so we'll have those. And then I don't really know the concept of Ultraman. I know he gets big somehow. Like to me, it's like a Power Ranger thing. Like there's like battles on the ground, I guess, and then they grow big. I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sure.
It kind of reminds me of what is Ant-Man's other ability when he gets big?
Oh, Giant Man, I guess.
Yeah, Giant Man.
He gets Giant Man. Yeah. I could see that.
It kind of seems like Shazam. Like an alien comes and gives somebody else power.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, that's like I said. I don't really know the concept of it. The trailer is really short. And there's no like dialogue. It's all like mood type trailer, more action. The graphics, the CGI reminds me of like Pokemon, I guess, like the smoothness of all the creatures looking at it. It has a style, I will say. It's not going too ultra realistic. It has a style. I don't mind. Like it fits what that style of what Ultraman is. And then the money shot, I guess, is him standing up and then that we don't know, like what will he battle and whatnot. I'm interested. I've never watched the previous films of Shinji. So I want to watch Shin Godzilla now. What do you guys talk about it? And it's it just came out like the last 5 years, so I'm like, oh, I'm interested in watching this.
I have the movie, so I could let you borrow it.
What does Shin mean in front of it?
I looked it up. It means heart in Japanese.
Oh,
so I don't know what it means, like other ways, but it means heart, Shin.
Like the people love him.
I guess, like, yeah, a love letter to Godzilla, a love letter to Ultraman, like those type. I'm not sure.
For me, I don't know much about it. Again, I like most of you, I know the action figures more than anything. The only thing I really know of Ultraman or seen currently is when Conan went to Japan. What's the creator of that one film with the guy from Lost or
J.J. Abrams?
No, not Lost. Walking Dead, the main, that guy that always looks dirty and he has like an arrow, and
that's
No, I know, but the video game, he's the one where he has a backpack and he walks.
Daryl.
Yeah. What's the video game company?
You're talking about
when he went. What's the video game?
This came out a couple of years ago.
Oh, okay.
And he wears like the puka shell necklace, and they have the baby and
Stranding.
Death Stranding. Yes.
We watched the whole game of this.
No, but when Conan went to Japan, and he was at the director's office, and the director had a bunch of action figures like Godzilla and Ultraman, and I think Conan was trying to steal him. That's about as far as I know. But of the trailer, I wouldn't. If you were watching it, John, I would sit next to you and be on my phone and watch it casually. But other than that, I don't really have too much interest in it.
Yeah, but like, I'm not in the same boat. Where I don't really know nothing about like Ultraman, but I actually watch a couple. And like when I got older, there's a lot of episodes on YouTube that you could find, but they're all dubbed. They're from the 1960s, and it does still depict like the same way as like this trailer, where you know, the way he grows as Ultraman and whatnot. But yeah, as a character, John said, like, I know the trading cards, the action figures, the stickers that we got from like the Asian markets. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, I have no idea. It's a blind spot too. Like with Joel, like I have no idea who Ultraman is, but I would consider watching it just because of the director, and I like his other stuff. I don't like Attack on Titan. I never watched it, Shin Godzilla, but I like what people say about it, so we'll see. And apparently he is really into like practical effects. I'm assuming that's how Shin Godzilla was filmed. He used like practical effects here and there with the suit of Godzilla. I don't know, from what I was like reading and whatnot. But yeah, it looks good. So it comes out like early this year, sometime this year. So looking forward to that in like streaming services. We'll move on to what we've been doing this past week. I'll ask you, Joel, what have you been doing?
I should be writing, but I've been playing No Man's Sky.
Yay.
This is a game that I don't think none of us talked about, because I do have a PS4, but I have not played the game yet. It was a game that I was looking forward to, but how much do you like it so far?
I when it came out, I think like 2016, it had like a terrible like review, and then someone had just said, you're gonna love this game, and I like it so far, but it's one of the things that what I like about it is it just pretty much says, hey, go here, grab this, good luck. And I've had to figure everything sort of out on my own, and that's what I've enjoyed. And failing and dying, restarting, getting lost has been, it's been the journey that I've really enjoyed. But I don't think this game has much of, if there is a narrative or a plot, I'm kind of doing it by accident.
Oh no.
I'm just like, oh, I gotta go pick this up. All right, oh, cool. I'll go pick this up. And it gives me a time to like multitask, like listen to a podcast or listening to something on Spotify. I feel it's a good way to decompress from like my job and like whatever, how weird and stressful the world has been. So just, I'm like, it's fun. I think it's more therapeutic than me coming out and being like, it's a blast, you should play it.
Because I think I felt like when it first came out, I fell in love with like the aesthetics of it all, and like how it's different from other games that have to deal with space, like Halo or what's that one Mass famous Effect. Game? Mass Effect. Yeah, like those two games, particularly, like they it's very, the color schemes are very bland, while this game always seems like they're using like vibrant colors.
Oh, yeah.
These planets look wonderful. Like they look like you want to at least stay there for a while. But like the whole game is basically like you're just digging up like resources, right? Or like kept getting resources and whatnot.
Yeah, I'm pretty much destroying a planet.
Okay. Okay. So
I'm committing climate change.
Yeah. Yeah. Never mind. No, I don't know how I feel about this game now. No.
Yeah, I had an ethical question like last night. I was just like, I have to mine for copper and silver and all these things. And there's a gun, they give you like a mining ray, and you just shoot, and all this stuff comes up. And I'm like, yeah, I don't feel comfortable about this, but I want to build this base.
Are there still living creatures on these planets that you interact with, though?
Yeah, I've been murdered by like something that looks like a T-Rex or a Godzilla-esque sort of creature.
You took 22 all
22 times.
22? Wow. Because
it keeps record of like every time you've been murdered by this or you fell to your death here. And I'm like, yeah, that's... That, you know, I'm glad I live alone, so I don't need someone to come in and mock me.
Can you kill the thing or no?
Yeah. Okay. No, I once I discovered that I could kill it, I pretty much also I'm basically gonna not ethically cleanse. That's the wrong way I want to use here. I'm gonna basically make one of these animals extinct very soon.
There you go.
So I'm probably gonna there's two games I'm like always in the back of my mind to play is like the Hitman series and then No Man's Sky, and I'm always like once I have free time I want to like play those both those games.
Is No Man's Sky free to play, or is it like you have to buy? Seems like a free to play game, but not really.
I bought it when they had like a ridiculous sale, I think. Okay. Sometime like Christmas or Black Friday, where it retails for like 20-30 bucks and I got it for like $5.
Oh wow.
It was like very cheap. And you can do multiplayer, but I don't like multiplayer. I'm an only child. I played video games for a long time with no internet connection and I was happy with it. And then once this thing happened, I'm like, no, put the genie back in the bottle.
So what the multiplayer aspect is, it just you guys, both of you guys are finding resources, or
I only have one friend who's playing who even played the game, and he's gotten a PS5 and gone off and probably playing Dark Souls or something of that nature. And we played Borderlands together, and he had to drag me from level to level because I'm terrible. That I'm like, it's not worth it to try to get him to play with me on here.
Here, when I get the game, we'll link up and we'll try to destroy planets together. Yeah.
Wait, find a friend.
Can you like make a planet your base? Like, oh, this is my home now. I'm going, because I know you can build stuff, right? That's one of the allures.
Yeah.
So can you do that or no? Like, you have to be moving around always to
plan. All right. So I'm still fairly early in the game. I don't think I've probably put, and I'm going to say this, and now it's going to sound really sad. Not sad, but when I think about actual time here, I don't think I've even put 20 hours into it yet. Mm. So I'm just now building a base. But the game sort of has like whatever planet you decide to be on, because you start on a planet and then you get enough resources to leave the first planet you're on, and then you kind of just bounce to another planet. Everything that I need to do is still on my second planet. Okay. But I have decided to build a base, and my goal is to build multiple bases on this planet. Really just sort of take over.
Wait, so you say goal. Is there like a box saying like you do this and then you do that? Or like is objectives? It like are you making the goals in you yourself, like to do this and do that?
There's a little bit of A and a little bit of B. It's gonna like you gotta, there's sort of like a tutorial where you'll do this and you get all these parts and you have to go through all these objectives. Because I said like there is a storyline that I'm just casually going in and out of, but it's my own personal goal of like, let's see, we can build a base.
Okay.
Let's build a super base. And then let's build like mini camps. my dad was army, so I'm so used to like, okay, you're gonna build a garrison, and then you're gonna get build some camps, and then you build some other things. That's when I play these sort of strategy games. I just take on what I've grew up with.
That's cool.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to play. But yeah, thank you. That is No Man's Sky on the PS4, right?
Yeah.
Cool. How about you, John? Did you do anything digging up resources?
No.
No climate change committee.
No. I didn't kill any animals of what I've been doing. So I've been reading a book, a comic book, a graphic novel, whatever you want to call it, from Jeff Johns and Gary Frank. It's called Doomsday Clock. So it's like the sequel to Watchmen from Alan Moore. So since the WB, or not WB, DC has all these properties. They have Watchmen and they have the DC Universe. And I won't spoil anything like major about the book because I think it's a book that everyone should read, especially if you're a fan of Watchmen and even the Watchmen TV show. Because the Watchmen TV show is like the unofficial sequel to Watchmen, this one does the exact same thing and an answer or gives you different narrative of other characters that you don't see in the TV show. And it's kind of cool in this, I don't know. It's like a very cool way of doing a sequel to a property that's, you know, everyone's beloved. Most people like it, even like the Snyder version. Yeah, it's just really cool. So in the comic book, it's their way of combining the DC universe and the Watchmen universe into one universe, basically. And then I never read previous, so there's like other stuff you have to read before this. I guess the DC is trying to not flatten, but make everything into one universe from like their other things from Doom, what do you call it? It's like Sandman, I guess, is one of the things they're trying to do. I think it's the Sandman. I'm wrong about that. There's other properties I've read, like DC's trying to like make into one universe, and they're doing it with Watchmen now. So this one
is similar, like how they did with like Swamp Thing is now part of like,
well, like the DC universe. Well, it's always been DC, but they're making it into like the main stories now. Like Everything's like existing within each other. Nothing's like part of another whatever Earth they're doing. I don't want to talk about the multiverse, but that's how it's very like every series Marvel and DC have like a multiverse and stuff. They introduced another concept of this. It's very like Alan Moore, Jeff Johns, if you ever read their book, very like out there, but it kind of makes sense, like the whole thing of what they're doing. Not a major spoiler, but this book takes place, if you guys read the original Watchmen, There's a scene with Dr. Manhattan where he has told everyone that I'm going to a different universe, or I'm going to make one. So that takes place literally after that moment, and you see what he's doing. Then you kind of get introduced of a whole these different characters. Some of them are very similar to other characters that you've seen in Watchmen, but others are brand new. Like there's these two characters I've never seen in Watchmen or in any DC property called the Marionette and Mime. They're a couple. The Mime can't talk, and Marionette has like an invisible string. They both look like clowns. So
like a puppeteer.
Like a puppeteer, in a sense. And they're very cool characters. Cool characters they introduce. And it's like their stories intertwine and everything. And then other DC characters from Batman to a whole bunch of characters. There's a splash page.
Condiment Man there?
I don't know. Oh, that's one of my favorite villains. That's why Audrey mentioned it. I don't know if he's in there. I have to look. There's a splash page of different groups in the DC universe, and they show like everyone. I was like, man, this guy. One of them is Doom Patrol, as I really love, and then it's like they show them from the older version to now. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. They combined it and stuff like that. But yeah, it's you know how like Watchmen tells you about how like superheroes are dark and they're nothing like happy and whatnot. Like it's like a different versions of superheroes. Like they all of them have like a past. Some of them are like bad, like past they don't want to talk about. But it's how we treat superheroes during that time in the 80s, I guess. Think about that for Doomsday, but how we treat superheroes now. Like how are superheroes different from the what 40 years? No, not 40 years. We're not 40 years old. 30 years, I guess. 30, almost yeah. 30 years old. And it's a good way of just looking at superheroes now. I say if you're like a huge Superman fan, read this book. It's like it's a really good story about how I wish there's this Superman in like in other properties, because it's quite kind of cool how they portray Superman.
Do you wish they would in the public, like in the movies, that they would have portrayed the Superman versus what they have?
Kind of done? Like yeah, they have done. Well, they're almost there. There are scenes in like Justice League I like of Superman where he is about hope, and that's why I like. But this book really shows who Superman is. It's not like a spoiler that he's in it, but because he's like the front and center. It's Dr. Manhattan and Superman are the like the front and center characters, and everyone else is just around them. And then they just do a good job, like touchstones of different characters. And then when I talk about that splash page, and you flip the page and there's another splash page of other characters, you're like, wow, this is cool. I seen this guy in this one, or her in this one. It's just really cool way they just intertwine all these different superheroes that made me more. So I'm not really like a huge DC fan. I like Marvel characters more, but I like DC stories more, if that's how mm-hmm. if you want to say it. Like I know if Audrey can say, like, most of the stuff, books I have are Spider-Man. The stories I like. Oh, no, but the stories I like are DC stories. Like, I have The Killing Joke.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't really collect Marvel stories. No, like, the stories.
From Spider-Man.
Yeah, besides Spider-Man. Besides Spider-Man. But I never, like, collect Civil War and stuff like that. Like, all those, like, stories that you want to know about Marvel, I never tried doing it, collecting those. It's more like I prefer DC because they're not matured, but they tell a really good story and a good narrative, and then they do a good job intertwining all these characters and still makes sense. I don't know if that's a thing. Yeah. If if you're a fan of Watchmen and just how that style of storytelling, the nine panels and whatnot, this is a good book to read, and I highly recommend it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm probably going to borrow that from you anyway.
Okay.
Joel, do you know anything about like Doomsday Clock or anything?
Yeah, no. I read comics pretty heavily, or I should be getting back into it. I want to read it, but I'm a Geoff Johns hater. Oh. So I'm just like sitting here like, just keep your mouth shut. Just keep your mouth
shut. No, it's fine. I don't like everything of Geoff Johns, so but I was surprised about this book.
Is he not a good writer, or is he a bad person?
He's a polarizing writer.
Like this, yeah, polarizing is the best way to describe it. I think what may turn me off was he does a lot of fan servicey sort of things, and I'm like, no, just end it here. Don't. Okay, fine. Okay.
Has he made a television series yet?
He made a lot. Like,
yeah.
Oh, he has. Yeah. Okay. I probably see his name in the credits, but I just didn't realize he's a lot.
Writer and producer of a lot of things.
He DC co-wrote stuff. Wonder Woman 1984.
Yeah. Okay, that explains a lot. Interesting. I wonder if that was his idea to. This body switching part. I don't know.
Or I wish my boyfriend back.
Fine. Yeah, I wish my boyfriend back.
I'm gonna keep this short because while I did enjoy Wonder Woman 1984, I also have read a lot of Wonder Woman, and I'm like, that's about normal. Like, I was like, okay, this is fine. I don't know what you guys are expecting. Have you read a Wonder Woman comic? Like, if she's not battling like the gods, you're getting kind of silly stuff. And I enjoy that for what it is, but I was just like, yeah, this is fairly normal, guys.
Like... Yeah, I enjoy the silliness of it all. Other than that, like, I think every guest we've had so far that watched that film has always been like, oh, we should make an entire podcast where we just talk about that film because so many people have so many different opinions about it.
Yeah, it's much like Jeff Johns' work. It's polarizing.
Yes, yes. But yeah, that's Doomsday Clock. How about you, Audrey? What you've been doing?
Just watching my favorite thing, mostly serial killer documentaries. The most recent one that came out, I think, on Netflix. Was it come out last week?
Yeah, yeah.
Night Stalker, The Hunt for a Serial Killer. So I didn't know much about Richard Ramirez. I know he's pretty famous for being in California. He's one of the only ones that I know that's like some sort of Hispanic serial killer. So it's something that's always like been in my mind, but I didn't go too in deep into it. But this story was pretty interesting. How many episodes was it?
Four, I think. It's four. Four one-hour segments.
Yeah, I think we watched it in one night.
Yeah, yeah.
I watched it in one night at least. I liked how they told the story. It was from the victim's perspective, and I'm always interested in things like that where they don't really glorify the serial killer, but it's something the underbelly of it, something that I've always just been interested in. I don't want to spoil too much of it. There's not too much to spoil. The story's known, but I think it's an interesting take on this. I don't know what else I want to say about it.
I feel like this is the worst serial killer. After watching
he did a lot I didn't know about.
So much like bad, like horrible stuff to every type of person. I was like,
yeah.
He has no like
children, adults, men,
yeah,
women.
Men, everything.
From what I remember, because I remember learning about this. I forgot why I even researched it, but he didn't have a pattern, right? His victims were anyone, right?
Yeah. Kind of, yes. It's anyone, yeah.
And it was hard to pinpoint for the detectives to know where he would go next because
they had a shoe, apparently. Like the shoe is like the shoe print is the thing that almost
was
like,
everywhere.
It's everywhere, and it's literally
a very
the
unique
thing.
It was like a unique size.
Yes,
and too.
It's the one thing that they didn't make public, and it's the one thing they were, or up to a point, they didn't make public. And then it's like the one thing, like they're almost getting this guy because they got it down to like a shoe, a type of shoe, where it's made and where it's sold, and to the point where they know when the last time it got sold, and they just figure out who bought it. Yeah, who bought it in this area in Los Angeles, basically. I was like, man, this is like, they're so close, so close, because when Richard Ramirez, I guess every clue is a shoe print in every area, but they're just having a problem of like, he kept on wearing the same shoe. That's all. That's it. And then at a certain point, it stopped. Like the thing got leaked or something.
Oh,
the
yeah,
shoe print.
Probably, yeah.
So they had a harder time, but it's just very like, wow. they were so close in so many times. How long is this case? I forgot how long.
How many years? I can't remember.
Yeah,
I can't remember details.
More, at least a couple of years it was going on. And it's like dozens of victims. And then it's really sad that there's other victims too. They didn't like...
They couldn't tell.
Like it's the same MO almost, but they couldn't link because it's either too far, or it's like what do you call that, like the MO is a little bit different, but it's almost exactly the same. Like, yeah,
I think another thing I liked about this too is that people were trying to make it a supernatural thing, but then the way that they portrayed the story was that there isn't like good and evil. It's just he was a bad person. There wasn't it wasn't really a supernatural thing. It was he was who he was, and there wasn't a devil involved. I know that they've tried to put the pentagram and all kinds of things like that, but I feel like that came later. Like, it wasn't in all of his things. Just something that, you know, I want the attention, so I know that this will grab attention, sort of thing like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's cool.
Hmm. Okay. That is Night Stalker on Netflix. I don't know what else to say because it's so dark.
Yes. You should see what we are watching in this house. It's like too much dark, and then I was like, we need something more lighthearted, and we did watch something more lighthearted, and that just made us more, made us cry. More
the little things was your lighthearted.
No. That is that. We'll talk about that film soon. So.
Okay, but that is Night Stalker. What's the whole title?
The Hunt for a Serial Killer.
The Hunt for a Serial Killer on Netflix. I've seen a trailer of that, and it's I'm always interested in that stuff too, but at the same time, I always want something to watch afterwards that would like
a palate cleanser.
Palate cleanser, like that would make me feel a little bit better.
We had to do that
better.
Last night. I can't remember what we watched, but we had to do that last night.
Yeah, I forgot what we watched. Oh yeah,
just trash TV. You know? Yeah, something on TLC.
It was something on TLC.
But yes, I'll bring it back to something more lighthearted, I guess you could say, something that's not like too heavy when it has to do with serial killers. But I watched the Amazon Prime movie, which is called One Night in Miami. It's the one that's directed by Regina King. It's written by Kemp Powers. He also wrote the stage play that's based on. But Kemp Powers, if you recognize the name, he also co-wrote Pixar's Soul that came out a couple of months ago. So that's he's having a really good career right now in Hollywood. So that's really good to see. Anyway, so the film, have you guys heard of this film?
I've seen the trailer. It reminds me almost of like a Quentin Tarantino style, right? Like
how it is.
Actually. Okay, yeah.
It
is.
Never mind.
No, though, but, like the.
I'm assuming the dialogue, in a sense of like it's like all dialogue.
No, no, yeah, it's not real, right?
No, it is real.
Oh, it is real.
Yes, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Never mind.
They did all meet each other?
Maybe I was thinking of something else.
It's real in this. It's real in the sense that it happened and that the events happen, but I think. What you're pertaining is like, did they discuss the things they discuss in the film?
Probably yes.
Like,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure. I know Kemp Powers based it on like it's known fact that they all met that night and they all like were together after the fight. So I think he just based that situation on what happened then. But essentially it's about these four black prolific men one night in Miami in 1964. It's when in the film he still is being called Cassius Clay, but it's when Muhammad Ali defeats Sonny Liston, and then he brings his friends in the film are Malcolm X, Jim Brown, and Sam Cooke, and they basically are in this room and they just talk about like social and philosophical issues that are like happening during that era in America. And it's in the 1960s, so it's like in the midst of like the civil rights movement and months after like when JFK was assassinated. So they're talking about like the future of America, especially the future of how America will have to deal with race and whatnot. So it's really delightful film. If you like films that have really great dialogue that plays like an important factor in the screenplay, where like it's not about like the characters are like spewing like exposition and whatnot, it's like fascinating and thought-provoking like dialogue among these men that were like well known at that time. I mean, they're well known now, but at that time they were like at their highest in the public eye and whatnot. But it's great from start to finish. I don't really want to spoil a lot what they talk about, but I do love how we all, I don't know if everyone here watched like Spike Lee's Malcolm X, but you know, everyone, when you think of Malcolm X and when it comes to films, we always think of Denzel Washington. Kingsley Benadire, I think that's his name, how you pronounce it. He plays a really great Malcolm X here, where I remember watching Denzel's portrayals of Malcolm X, where it seems like he's godlike in a way, where at the time he's like, I mean, he's still a great actor now, but at the time he was like at his best, like he was doing so many films at that time. And this one, they kind of toned down the I don't know how you say it, but like they kind of toned down like how we view Malcolm X into this guy who's like into photography, where he just wants his friends to be good people. Like, there was nothing too heavy, but at the same time, they do talk about heavy stuff in the film. But I think I admire what they how they portray Malcolm X. I think that's we don't see that as much. We always see his like great speeches and whatnot, and how, and you know, when he's in what do you call that, when he's doing interviews. But this is a really great portray. It's same as like with Muhammad Ali, Eli Gore, I think that's how you pronounce his name. He really, like, we all used to with Will Smith's Muhammad Ali, but he, I think he does it better, Eli Gore, like, with his portray. He doesn't play it in the, I think I respect Will Smith's portrayal of Muhammad Ali, but I think Eli Gore does it really well, where it's more grounded. Because I think we think about Will Smith, I think Will Smith overcapsulates like
you're that. You're seeing too much Denzel, and you've seen too much Will Smith.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think with Kinsley Benadire and Eli Gore, when they portray these characters, you don't see those actors. You actually see Malcolm X and Cassius Clay. But great film. I really loved it. I really recommend it on Amazon Prime. I think that is it. So we're going to go to our main discussion. This week's main discussion is The Little Things.
You know, you and I are a lot alike.
Why is that?
I got six bodies.
Why is that?
We got something. We just don't know what it is.
In another lifetime, we could be friends.
Why?
Why not?
Why is that? Why is that?
We know.
That is a trailer, or that is a piece of the trailer, I guess you could say.
A clip, you can say?
The clip, yes. The clip of The Little Things, directed by John Lee Hancock, starring Denzel Washington, Rami Malek, and Jared Leto. This is funny. When the premise that is described on IMDb, it's literally this premise. Two cops track down a serial killer.
Yay.
And that's it.
I mean, that is what it is.
So I'll start with you, Joel. What's your thoughts about the film, and how much of a fan of Denzel are you?
Okay, let me start with the Denzel thing.
Yeah,
he's in my top five greatest actors of all time. I honestly, it goes between him and Meryl Streep as being like number one. You know, I would have seen this whether I'm not have been on the show. If things were normal, I would have seen this opening day.
Same here.
I'm gonna, and before I kind of go into this, you had three Oscar winners. You had Leto. You had Romney. If I call him Mr. Robot, that's what he is in my head.
There you go. That's actually a much better way to describe him. I don't know their names. I know where they've been.
Yeah, so you've got Denzel, Mr. Robot, and Jared Leto.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you got a all-star cast, you've got all this thing going for it, and you give me a lukewarm at best film. I in the middle of it, I got out my phone and I was looking to see if this was like adapted from a book, because it feels like this is part of a series. This isn't book one, this is like book two or three. And then when I discovered that this was like an original script, I was like even more lukewarm on the whole project. It's 2 hours and some change. It took an hour to get going, and then when it finally did get going with Denzel and Mr. Robot in the car taking out Jared Leto, I was like, yeah, I'm here for this. And then the ending kind of happens.
For the listeners, we're going to do spoiler heavy. So if you don't want to know anything about like the plot, I suggest shut down your iPod and then revisit us.
Yes, your
later.
iPod.
Only, yeah. make sure only the iPod people.
Continue on, sorry.
That ending happened, and I get what they were trying to go for. And when I thought about it today, I thought that was kind of cool, but the execution was lacking. And I saw that people are comparing it to Seven, And I feel that's
exactly what I thought when I first saw the trailer. I was like, oh, this is Seven, but it's not Seven.
Yeah. So I feel like the guy who wrote Seven probably saw that, like, saw this movie and went, I should have never gotten out of bed for this. I never thought I'd say this. Between the three actors, Jared Leto was probably the best one.
Oh, no.
I have to agree with you.
Yeah. I'm only saying that because he's playing a creepy dude, and allegedly, I don't want to get anyone sued here, he's a creepy dude. So it didn't seem like he was doing a lot. and Mr. Robot seemed to be out-acted, and I have a degree in creative writing, and I had a professor once say to me, why are you doing a period piece? So this is set in the 90s.
Yeah.
And I kept going, I don't understand why this could have been 2000. I was waiting for something that you needed to only be in the 90s for, or maybe a time jump that I didn't understand that. And then in my back of my head, I'm like, if this was done in like 2000 or 2001, you probably would have gotten some actor like Aaron Eckhart to do the Mr. Robot role, and more personality. His cold acting works like on Mr. Robot, but this one he was just kind of like, yeah, I got a family.
Yeah, it seemed like he was supposed to be the young gun, and it didn't really feel that way.
Not at all.
Yeah. Like the young gun in Seven with what's his name?
Brad Pitt.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. It didn't feel like that at all.
So,
is that it? Like, do you have more?
This would probably have been an interesting Netflix series if you have given it like 8 episodes and time for them to kind of flesh out all the characters. Like, I could see like 2 episodes on Denzel's character, 2 episodes on Jared Leto, and then 2 episodes on Mr. Robot, and then the other 2 just to fill like your like plot heavy sort of stuff. This didn't feel like it had enough time to do anything, even though it was 2 hours. That's like my big thing that's going to be really disappointing. And I'm just kind of like butting that to say this. I know in about 5 years, there's going to be some crappy article on some film website saying that this movie was underrated and that it had some sort of cult status. And I'm going to be very angry because it doesn't deserve it.
The headline would be The Little Things, Better Than Seven or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh no.
No, that's not true.
Audrey, I know you were looking forward to this because in our most anticipated episode, you list this as one. I feel like because of the degree of like it's Denzel, Jared Leto, like you have this ominous like setting, like Seven. Even I feel like the cinematography even captures that Seven vibe.
I think that's what they were trying to do. They were trying to trick us. They wanted all those people who enjoy Seven to come over here and come see this as well.
Yes. Yeah. So what's your thoughts?
It was super slow, and some things happened for no apparent reason, or like there was no payoff. But I kind of liked how disappointing it was. I think that's how it is in life, that there is, you try to make these connections, you want it to work, you want to get the bad guy, and 99% of the time, you won't find a connection. These things will go unsolved. There is no bad guy. It is random acts in the world. All there really is chaos, sort of thing. I know Jared Leto is very much a method actor. I never watched Suicide Squad, and I know that's like people say that's one of, I don't know, I feel like people say that's one of his worst jobs or his overacting jobs. I liked him. And what's the movie with him and the Wayne's brother dude?
Requiem for a Dream.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I totally forgot about that movie.
I really, really enjoy him in there.
Marlon Wayans is in there.
Yeah. 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 His choices in here were really weird. I hated that he had, I know he had a fake belly, and he had this weird ass gait when he walked. I was like, why do people with bellies walk like that? I did not understand that. It was that threw me out of the whole thing the whole time. And I didn't like how the how they portrayed the Denzel being haunted by the I guess they're his angels, I guess, haunted by the haunted by the victims, by them literally just being there and standing there, because that's not how you would imagine them. I want to see it as a flashback, as them on the autopsy table, not just them staring at you in the middle of the dark where you're in some seedy hotel sort of thing like that. But I know we were talking, actually today we were walking to the coffee shop and we were talking about this, and you were, John, you were really, really upset about this. But frustrated, but I really like how it's not a happy ending, that that they were wrong and that they were corrupt people, sort of things like that, that everybody's bad and everybody thinks that they have a high moral code, especially those in some sort of power over the greater majority of the people sort of thing. But and the fact that they have each other's backs and they will take things to their grave for each other, because 99% of the time they are really good and they do help out a lot of people, but they're just as bad as the one dude who did all the killings.
Like that, you know? Yeah, I didn't mean to jump in here. I did like that at the end we see that Denzel got the brooch and just basically was like, I know I fucked this kid up and I need to fix this.
Yeah.
And I was totally cool with that. But that final scene where we see him in the in the coroner's room office, and she's like, I'm going to lie about this. I was like, we didn't need that.
Yeah.
That was where I was like, we got it already. We got, it's kind of adding too much to what we already had.
With that, like, let them trust the audience putting the pieces together. Yeah,
they didn't think we were that smart enough to catch on that.
It's like, here, you see, this is all being corrupted, guys. Mm-hmm. We need this last person to tell us this. anything else, Audrey?
I think that was it.
So, John, why were you frustrated about it?
I was frustrated because the cops are corrupted and they're portrayed throughout the whole film like heroes. Like, you know, like we are introduced to Denzel. Something happened in the past. He's, and everyone, like, there are certain people in his the police department don't like him. And we don't know why. And my whole mind is like, oh, he did something bad in the way, like, he went too far and killed the serial killer or something like that. Like, he did something good, but he went too far to do it. That's always like the thing we get portrayed. Like, they're good cops, but he lost his temper and punched someone. That's why he got kicked out or whatnot. Whole time, it's like that in my mind. Like, something's up with him and stuff like that. And then when they reveal, like, what actually happened, it's all just corruption. And my feeling is like, man, these cops are just bad. Like, they're just literally just bad people. Why am I even feeling sorry for Denzel, for what's his name, Rami Malek, and all stuff? And
Mr.
then,
Robot.
Yeah, and then it Mr. just Robot. Made me question of like the whole thing of like, oh, just these bad apples are the were bad thing. But then the whole thing is like, if that one bad apple and these other police people are helping to cover, they're all bad apples. Like, the whole thing's corrupted. Like, why do I even want to...
That's how it is. That's the truth of the world. Everything is fixed. Everything is seedy.
But it's so like...
I know you don't want to believe it.
I want to believe that, but it doesn't make me want to like watch this movie or even cheer for any of these characters. Or like, it puts you in your back of your mind. Like, yeah, what he did is bad, but I don't want to like even... I don't know. It just have the feeling like I don't want to.
You
want to
feel good ending. There is no feel good ending.
No, but I like movies where it makes you feel like you are cheering like for the villain or something like that. Like what's his name? Night Stalker, where he's like a news.
Nightcrawler,
like that. Yeah. Like those type of films like that. But this one, I think because you have these police officers and they're always portrayed as good people. And then all of a sudden you find out, like, no, it's all corrupted. Like, they even corrupted Rami Malek now. Like, he has to go home. Well, they kind of free him, I guess, with the little fake thing. Make him think he's good.
I was so afraid.
He found closure, closure.
I was so afraid that he was going to be so out of it that his daughters were going to drown and that he wouldn't do anything about it.
There are so many moments that I think... Audrey, you were saying like it will feel like Seven when he started digging up at the very ending. Jared Leto.
I was hoping all of the bodies would be there. His whole family would be there.
I was thinking like, oh, he's doing three bodies. You know, he making three, and then he's going to say like Jared Leto's talking about, I saw your family, your photos. I thought he's going to have the bodies in the trunk or something. And like, oh, they caught the guy. Like, they really caught him, but they did like a
But Jared Leto is us. He's the creep. He's the one that's always watching these things and is fascinated with these things. Jared Leto is me.
Yeah. I don't
know if you want to admit that. No, but I mean, you like to see that. You want to see that because that makes you feel normal. Mm-hmm. And then you realize that you empathize, you said that is me, and you realize, wait, no, I'm normal, I'm just as bad as they are.
Yeah, then they show the flashback of Denzel Washington killing an innocent person, and they're all covering it up.
She's so a victim, like, right?
She's a victim.
She was a victim. Yeah.
Like, they could have
solved it and saved it.
Yes, they could. I mean, that's the whole thing. Like, he could have solved the whole case if he didn't shoot that young lady in the first place. And then that's the thing.
Yeah, she was a young lady.
Yeah, that's haunting him the whole time in the movie because he misstepped. That's the whole thing. And it's like, mm-hmm. But the corruption part is the thing that's like, man, I don't like that.
Well, maybe that's
like,
why they did it a timepiece, because there's so much corruption now.
Well, they did a timepiece so they can use a beeper and a payphone and that's it.
I know, but both because you can't track it down these days, we think that we can find corruption now because we have body cams we're such a visual and there's cameras everywhere, but people still get away with corruption, even mm-hmm. with all this.
Oh, that's a good observation even with all of it.
Yeah.
Like that.
Okay, you made me make like the movie more.
That's what I'm saying is because it's you see it now that it is the world. It is what it is now. Mm. Especially during the pandemic, we have no distraction. We can't go out and go eat whenever we want. We can't go to the movie. We can't go to the bowling alley. So we're forced to see the seedy underbelly, which has been here this whole time, of the oppressed people and of all that stuff, you know,
like on the news.
Yeah, no, like BLM and all the stuff and Trump and all that stuff. You know, we are forced to face it now, and nobody likes it. Nobody wants to see that.
Yeah.
I'd rather go and go watch, you know, Wonder Woman have hope or whateverness. I don't know. I don't know. I hated 84 so bad.
Yeah, like, I heard that episode.
I hate it. Oh, no, I don't understand. I don't want to wish my boyfriend back from the dead. And I'm going to, no, sorry. That's all.
What if they wish? Never mind. I don't want it. That's a weird joke in this movie. Anyway, John, still sounds like you're really frustrated. I will say that I found the film middling. I guess that's the best word.
I'm in the middle.
Middling. I think I'm taking parts of everything that you guys are saying. Like, I really, like, I enjoy Jared Leto's like performance here. It's very excessive. Like, he's like going like super creepy.
I bet you he did not shower this whole time.
Yes, yeah. Oh. There's a little anecdote I was reading. I don't know if you guys caught this online, where there's a story when they were making this film, because people know Jared Leto is being this method actor, that he's being character on set, and that apparently Denzel didn't want anything about that. Mm-hmm. So he just kept himself away from him the whole time. He didn't want to like small talk or anything because he gets annoyed by that type of.
He's just a coworker.
Yeah.
We don't have to hang out in the lunchroom, dude.
Yeah. So that's an interesting like anecdote I read, where Denzel just stayed away from Jared Leto because he didn't want to be part of that.
But
whole
did you hear
mess.
What Denzel did after or didn't during?
Didn't he like follow him or something, and he didn't know?
Yes,
Jared Leto.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, that's kind of cool.
To creep him out. Yeah.
To creep him out because he did that in the film. So I was like, oh, that's kind of cool.
I want to be method too.
I think he was like mocking Jared Leto with his method acting. Yeah.
You're stupid.
I forgot which it's an article out there that I was reading, but it's a really good bit that they did on the film sets. But yeah, I found the film meddling. I think Denzel
is meddling a word, or is that something you're saying?
Yeah,
I never heard
meddling,
of it.
Yeah, I found Denzel like very grounded, and then that everyone else, especially Mr. Robot and like Jared Leto, like being these, like they're trying like their Oscar winning trident performance in my mind, like they're trying to see if they could
do
each other.
Yeah, they're trying to be their version of a trope.
Yeah. And then I think Denzel is just like, oh, let me just do my thing, and like, you know, let me do my best acting possible and just let them do whatever they want to do. So I did some research too, because I too, like Joel, like I wanted to know if this was based on something, because it feels weird that the way it's set up, it feels like it's based on true stories. And then I was reading that it's not based on anything, but because it was happening in the early 90s, I think that's when the Night Stalker was happening.
They
right?
mentioned the Night Stalker.
If you're yeah, okay, yeah. yeah. So I'm assuming the writer director John Lee Hancock was like inspired by those moments when he wrote it, because he wrote it actually 30 years ago, but he just didn't have the finances.
In the 90s,
is that the time?
Yeah,
in the 90s. Yeah,
it looked like is that math.
Yeah,
don't make me math.
And he looked like he never went past the first draft of his script because he didn't want to
first time's the best time. You got to go with your instinct, man.
Yeah, it feels. Even though it's in the 90s, it feels too dated to the point where you're like, oh, this feels like it's not necessarily shouldn't be in the 90s. It feels like it could be up like, you know, up to date now and still have those corruptions and, you know, have the way they are like solving the case. It feels like it's now, like it doesn't feel anything about the 90s at all, except for old cars and like John Zed beepers.
That's what I was saying too. The way they made it in the 90s was put dust on all the cars.
Yes. That's yeah. But yeah, other than that, I just felt like it's, I think I would still watch it. Like, I mean, in the movie theater, if people were to like, critics were like, oh, it's not a good movie, I still probably just watch it because of Denzel. And
does it have a Rotten Tomatoes?
It does. Already? It's still, I mean, I don't know what the score is. But like
66.
The film that I reminded, what was it?
55. Or that's
okay. Meta. 55 is middling. I guess you could say.
That word, I don't like that. I don't know why.
Middling sounds so.
It sounds like a portmanteau. Yeah. Middling. I mean,
but everyone's keep on comparing it to Seven. The one movie I was comparing it to in my head was Insomnia with the Nolan directed film.
I never saw
it's
that.
Exactly the same when it comes to
the Obsession, I think.
For Insomnia. Obsession and Corruption. Like they take the two themes in that film. Exactly the same way. And then it feels like a blend of Seven and Insomnia to me, where Al Pacino was this like old detective who's really great, and he is being held by I forget the actress name. She's the Million Dollar Baby. Mm-hmm. I'm just gonna call it the Million Dollar. Huh?
I call it the Karate Kid.
Hilary Swank. Yeah, where Hilary Swank was like kind of the rookie cop, and then Al Pacino was like the you know, the detective that knew. Experienced detective and whatnot. So I kind of like had, I mean, that's a trope in noir, I think, especially modern, you know, like Seven and whatnot. So, but yeah, I think I liked it. I think I liked it a little bit more than I expected, but at the same time, I think I'm not going to like revisit it.
Yeah, one time is fine.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
You gave it your shot. There you go.
Did you notice? I don't know. I have to rewatch the trailer, but there's a scene in the trailer where it is the drone shot, like going above like a bird's eye view, and you see him digging the hole. Mm-hmm. And the trailer, it doesn't show the body of Jared Leto. It just shows Malik, like just, I think, just digging. I noticed that. Yeah. And I was like, when I watch it, it's actually his body was still, this is like happening during the daylight. And I was like, oh, they removed his body. In the trailer, it looks like. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
it's those little things, Ben, that they don't show in the trailer, right?
Yes. Okay. I do also like that sequence when I know it's I was also frustrated about like the ending. I thought it was like kind of bittersweet, but at the same time, I was like, oh, that's like an interesting way to like put all the pieces together. Is like. You see Mr. Robot digging and not digging, but you see the body next to Mr. Robot, and it has Denzel like remembering what he did that was almost similar, like parallel to what Mr. Robot did. So I was like, oh, okay, I guess that's cool. But yeah, I think that is it for the little things. I think we all found it middling.
Yes. Middling would be exactly how I would describe it.
Do you guys have anything to add? Do you have any spoilers? Like anything you want to add more?
I don't have a spoiler, but I have a quick question, and it may just me be getting old. But was the score like really loud or annoying? Like it was kind of jarring for me.
Was jarring to me too.
Okay, cool.
I don't remember.
It's like one tune they're playing, like a piano, like hitting a key or something, like. One key. I don't know. It's a very. It's like the title sequence. Yeah, and they replay that all over again
And but don't all like horrors and thrills have that? Isn't that supposed to let you know that something scary is gonna happen?
Well, not. I mean, that's the job, but not that. Like, have you guys seen Tenet?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh,
it's like Tenet's score. I was like, okay, this is good, but this doesn't need to be this loud. Yeah. So obvious. And this, the same thing with the little things where I'm like, is this just me? Or is this just like something with Warner Brothers where we're just going to pump up the score too much? Like, I don't know. Like, and maybe I wouldn't notice it if I was in a theater, but I'm at home on my, like my sound system that I'm like, I don't need to lower the volume, or at least I don't want to. So it's just a jarring thing that I noticed.
I noticed that too in Wonder Woman 1984 when, not really.
That's
when they're playing 80s music throughout the whole random 80s music. But yeah, so that is a little things. It's on HBO Max. I think what's the next film that's coming out now from HBO Max? Is it Godzilla and Kong versus Kong?
Really? That, yeah, I don't think that has a release date yet.
Okay. I know in their streaming service, they have like that little section where like what's coming up next. I think it's like that, and then Mortal Kombat is the next one.
Mortal Kombat.
Yeah. But yes, where can they find you online, John?
Oh, we're already doing this?
Yeah.
You can find me on Twitter at the most organized Twitter feed of 20XX at Abaya Arts.
You know, recently I just realized why he calls it the organized, his Twitter feed organized. I don't have Twitter, so I don't like follow him or anything. Is that he keeps everything, because what is it? We needed a dinner recipe last night. And you're like, I saw this 2 years ago, something about vegetables or something. And then he found it and I was like, oh, okay, that is good that it's organized. I'm not organized, so I guess it didn't work out. I just realized why he did that.
But yeah. Wait. So, John, what did you say?
Sorry.
Twitter at ByArts.
Oh, cool. And then how about you, Audrey? You don't have a Twitter.
I don't have a Twitter, but you can find me at, was it Rejected? I always say it wrong.
Rejected Jokes.
I always want to say .com. It's not .com. No. It's at Rejected Jokes. There you go.
On Twitter.
Benny Schwab.
And Joel, where can they find you online?
You can find me at milliondollarunderwearzine.com, and you can find me on Twitter at Barber Comedy. Basically, if it's at Barber Comedy, anything online, that's most likely me.
Cool. I highly recommend purchasing the zines. I keep on saying zine. But yeah, your issue 3 is on there for free, so I really recommend reading that too. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Benjamin Abaya. You can find all of us on Instagram and Twitter at TFA Now. You can engage with us on Facebook at The Freaking Awesome and our Discord server, which we'll link on the show's notes. Please subscribe, rate, comment on iTunes and Google Play. Email us or email us your concerns, comments, and corrections at contacts@thefreakingawesome.com. Like we mentioned in the past couple episodes, we are starting a Patreon, so look out for that. I don't think nothing's published yet. But before we go, Joel, we've been asking our guests to add on to our Freaking Awesome list, which is Freaking Awesome list of 2021. So we're going to have Freaking Awesome 21 things that are freaking awesome. Right now, we have three items. Hannah, these are from other guests too. Hannah mentioned the Netflix's Queen's Gambit. Chachi has mentioned the Kawaii album. Is this Audrey? It is John, right?
Yeah.
John has mentioned the Bernie Sanders mitten meme. Joel, would you want to add anything on this list?
Yeah, I would love to. I'd like to mention a graphic novel that came out last year. I want to say like the summer, fall time has no meaning anymore in a pandemic. It's a graphic novel from Oni Press. It's called Smooth City by Kenny Kyle. It's a one standalone graphic novel about a 90s R&B group. It's comedy. It's hilarious. It's a love letter. It's like 90s R&B, New Jack Swing, that like early style, that early blend of hip hop and R&B. I've been a big fan of Kenny Kyle since like 2000, 2007-08 when he put out Tales to Suffice, and I've been following his career ever since. Oh
wow, I remember him now.
this is his first big because he did self-published Kickstarter for Tales to Suffice, so this is his first big project under somebody else, and I can't wait to annoy people with me talking about how great this book is. I laugh my ass off. He did a really great playlist. He's definitely a guy who inspired me with the zine. So go out and get it. It's on Amazon. It's probably at your small independent bookstores. I use Amazon because I got Amazon Prime and I'm lazy. But I highly recommend Smooth City from Kenny Guile.
Yeah, I remember Kenny Cow from OK Player when he was also talking about that, his first book. And I was like, yeah. Oh, that's kind of cool. I've seen, I think you've been tweeting about this, and I've seen the art and everything, and it's really gorgeous. I love when artists use like vibrant colors like that.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely especially that.
Depicting like a certain era. I would probably going to purchase that too. Once again, thank you, Joel, for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me.
Thank you for listening. Again, people, please continue to wear masks, social distance, and try not to gather too much. I'm Benjamin Abaya.
I'm John Abaya.
I'm Audrey Abaya.
I'm Joel Barber.
And that has been the Freaking Awesome Podcast.